ready to go?
Yes.
Hello.
You can start.
Hello, hello.
Aha, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming. Look at all of you wonderful people, actually.
Whoa. Let me put my glasses on so I can see you. Ah, you look even better close up. That's good. So I'm going to talk a little bit about office documents. One of the deep joys of the world at the moment is there's so much excitement about digital sovereignty and moving office suites into a sovereign infrastructure, and that's great. But then people think, well, office is easy. Let me write my own. There's all this money out there for this. Let me try and do that. And the browser can do it for free for me, so it's easy. You know, like, there's almost an office suite in a web browser, so let's just use that, and that would be great. And so I'm just going to walk you through a few of the unanticipated difficulties that you might experience when you try this. So obviously, very easy things. You know, people know about proportional text and monospace text, and that's all great, and Unicode solves everything until you hit the web dings and the wing dings and all that sort of thing. But it's easy to solve these problems. You know, we need metric-compatible fonts because, you know, the size of the glyphs is really important, because that determines the layout of your document. But either way, it's easy to fix because we can embed these things. And actually, PDF does this. So PDF subsets all your fonts and sticks little bits of them in your PDF. And so this is all very simple. Of course, the world is actually a little bit more complicated. There are people there that are right to left, and that's obviously not very difficult. You know, and a fine transform will flip your screen. In fact, you could just get some glasses that go the other way around, except it's not nearly as easy as that because there's mixed left to right and right to left text, and the whole thing becomes rapidly quite problematic. And then, of course, there's laying things out. So layout seems very simple. I mean, you know, when you write a document by hand, it's all just fine, isn't it? That's no problem at all. But the problem is there's all sorts of complexities with text that you don't realize. And as you start to lay it out, you discover, well, it's a bit of a nightmare, isn't it? This is a very simple layout problem. So on the right-hand side is a great example of auto-hyphenation not working in Google Docs. And hyphenation turns out to be difficult. And that's great, but a little bit like writing your own programming language. I don't know, lots of people write their own programming language. It's very trendy to write your own programming language, isn't it? You know, yeah, look at that, you know, excellent. Yeah, well, some of us do. I think there's a truism of writing new programming languages, which is this: by the time the debugger works, the language is obsolete, right? And this is a fairly true of everything. I mean, if you try and debug Java embedded in C, embedded in C++, you know, it's still, just setting a breakpoint is anyway. So, I mean, like, it seems really easy, doesn't it? But actually, to do this right, you need, like, dictionary-based stemming, you know, it's quite clever. And that's before you get into smart justification, where there's combination of, you know, kerning and squeezing characters and shrinking spaces and hyphenation to try and make the text look as beautiful as possible without huge jagged holes in it. And Laszlo Nemeth, who is sitting at the back here and waving at me, is a hero of creating Hunspell and doing awesome things for this. But forget even that difficulty, because this is the rocket science. Just the simple stuff. You know, we're laying stuff out on the page, and we're putting things in, and it's all going super well. You know, we're playing Tetris, and it's just packing beautifully. You know, we're going to hit the high score. And then we think, well, we can get a bit more in the bottom, and we get that in, and it brings with it a footnote, right? But the footnote then changes the page size, and now we have to shrink the page size, go back and see if we can fit it all in again. And maybe we can, but that's actually changed the number of pages in the document, and there's a page number field, and that then forces a reflow, and now we can't fit it in. Or there's an image in it that's anchored to, anyway, it all gets quite fun. And that's before we get to actually complicated text. So I don't know, who likes Ruby, you know? And of course, Ruby is a programming language, I believe. But it's also this wonderful way of semantically annotating Tokyo. This is Tokyo, I believe. I'm not very good at reading, but this is the English one there, and I can read that one, right? And actually, there's a whole load of differences there. And the great news is, of course, vertical text. So, you know, we're used to web pages that you scroll downwards, you know, that you keep going down and more text comes. But some people scroll sidewards because their text goes like this, right? Which is all fun, right? It just adds to the rich variety of life. And the good news is that if you use an HTML div and you actually do all of the extra coding and UI stuff to make this work, then you can actually do this in the browser, and that's great. And the browser will lay it out for you, and that's beautiful. The problem is that if you want to actually get WYSIWYG editing, you can't leave the browser to its own devices. You have to switch to using the canvas. And then you have all this great control of where glyphs are, and none of this is there for you. You have to re-implement it all. So that's great. You rapidly hit this wall. And then, of course, you want to print. And that's easy, because as we all know, browsers can print. And that's great, isn't it? Anyone who's printed a Google Maps or whatever and noticed, why is it crammed in the corner? We'll know a little bit about paper sizes and the complete lack of API there in the browser. You can't even work out what page size your printer has from JavaScript. You just have no idea. So, you know, so it's a great thing we use the canvas to render, because that's not going to print at all, really. And we can then, you know, handle all that complex text and then generate PDFs and render it twice to make it print. So, yes. And of course, the browser is very frightened of, yes, fingerprinting your devices. So it loves to turn off things that can tell you about your system. So anyway, we've done a bit of text, and that's all good. But let's think about spreadsheets. So spreadsheets are, you know, another source of never-ending fun and a personal passion of mine. Let me see if I can read this. What does it say? Yeah. So we have more than 2^32 possible cells in a single sheet in a spreadsheet, which is quite a lot. Now, of course, almost no sheets actually have that much data, because it will, you know, probably kill your machine, unless you have a very efficient way of storing the data. And so we have, yeah, we're doing pretty well. We used to have this quite mad way of storing cells, because it's a very sparse data structure, which was essentially a row number and then a pointer to what was in the cell. So we just had these great swaths of numbers, which would typically go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, with a whole load of pointers next to them. Of course, sometimes they wouldn't go 7, they would go 8, you know, and it's exciting. And it turns out that there's this thing called interpolation search. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's probably not a very popular computer science search form, but it has a computational complexity of log the number of things, which is the kind of complexity you want in life. If you can get a log n, that's really good. We switched away from that because of obvious problems with this method. Particularly, pointer chasing is a nightmare, and modern CPUs hate pointer chasing. I mean, just caches. Yeah, it just doesn't work, basically. And this is partly why Java is quite as slow as it is, because everything's a pointer, you know? But there you go. So we then did a whole load of work to inline, for example, great chunks of doubles, so you can use SSE accelerated arithmetic and so on things, which is really cool. And so we have now a much more compact and better structure. And it's brilliant. And you can thread it, and you can do SIMD, and it's great. Or you could use JavaScript. And the implementations here use sparse arrays. You know, it's just basically a hash table on the array index, often down a row or a column. And that's great, obviously. And in theory, constant time lookup. But in reality, another massive pointer chasing disaster areas. And you may think that this is not relevant, but the component that first gave us your zips are not 64-bit safe, and we have streams inside these zip files that decompress to more than 4 gigabytes of data, as we parse, it was calc. And this just does happen quite a lot. And so, talking of computational orders, we have a fixed cost XML parser that will parse any size file in constant time. Anyone want to heckle me? Well, it's sort of true. Basically, we thread it. So there's a fixed cost of starting up the thread.